Joseph G. Ropart's Serenade. You heard the Vancouver Radio Orchestra in performance led by Daniel Swift. That's from the Parisian Ballet's recording. And you're with the New Classical FM. My name is Mark Wigmore.
The Oasis Look at the Arts is brought to you by Kerner Hall, one of the world's great concert halls, featuring the best in classical, jazz, world, and roots music. For more information, visit rcmusic.com/performance.
Beginning a week tonight, Tapestry Opera heads to the Betty Oliphant Theater for its presentation of Jacqueline, a portrait of virtuosity. The pieces dive into the real-life struggle that celebrity virtuosic cellist Jacqueline Dupré faced when multiple sclerosis ravaged her body, mind, and talent, robbing her and the world. This intimate piece for soprano and cello brings two contemporary virtuosi to the stage, celebrated American soprano Marnie Breckenridge as Jacqueline, and she's joined by renowned cellist Matt Heimovitz. Matt will be performing, but also will help to tell the emotional story. The opera is inspired by Edward Elgar's cello concerto, which Dupré was famous for interpreting. The form of the work echoes Elgar, using the concerto's four-movement structure to navigate an all-too-short life in music. Joining me in studio to preview Jacqueline is cellist Matt Heimovitz and Luna Pearl Wolf, who is responsible for this production's music. Welcome to you both.
Thanks so much for having us.
Great to have you both here. Who was Jacqueline Dupré?
Jacqueline Dupré was one of the cello giants in our history.
Yeah.
Sort of a meteoric career. Began early and married Daniel Barenboim and took the world by storm and inspired so many people with her music. She was diagnosed with MS.
Right.
And she had to give up playing the cello in her entire career.
And at a very young age, I think that's worth...
At a very young age. How old was she?
She was only maybe 28 when she had to stop playing. So
right.
she was on the world stage for a decade and had rocketed to international stardom and then had that ripped away from her. You know, 8 years later, she was feeling the symptoms. 10 years, she couldn't play.
And you were a student... And a friend and a fan, is that right?
I did come into contact with her at a certain point, and she coached me and listened to me play. The story really begins with Daniel Barenboim. I was perhaps 13 years old, living in New York City, and my mentor, Itzhak Perlman, called and said, we're just finishing up our Seder, our Passover Seder, and Daniel Barenboim is here and would love to play some chamber music. You want to come over? And so I took the West Side bus up to Perlman's.
You said, no, I don't want to hang out with huge huge rock stars of this genre.
Well, it was that
genre.
Or finish the Seder, you know? And the second part is no fun. So so I took the bus. We started to play cello and piano sonatas. The first one we played was Brahms' E minor sonata for cello and piano. And unbeknownst to me, Barenboim had not played with another cellist until that moment. And it was very moving for him. It was very emotional. And he was impressed with my playing and invited me very shortly afterwards to make my European debut in London with the English Chamber Orchestra. And he conducted my first European performance. And one of the perks of that first performance was that I arrived early to London and I spent the week with Jackie, listening to her recordings, watching her videos. That gave her a lot of pleasure, and just sharing this. Of course, I was familiar with many of them, especially the Elgar Concerto.
And at this point, she was not well. She was
very, very ill,
right.
In a wheelchair, couldn't even feed herself at that point. And in fact, we had meals together, and I helped her eat and move around in her wheelchair, and then she invited me to go and just very generous and just, you know, play her cellos. She had two Stradivarius cellos, which are gorgeous, and she had a Goffrillo cello, and she had a modern cello, which actually was her favorite. So she had me play, you know, the old ones, and then she brought out the modern one. She said, now play this. This is way better. she was really into the new one.
What was her connection to Elgar in that particular piece? Because that's what we are going to experience as part of this opera.
She really put the Elgar on the map. It's interesting. My teacher was Leonard Rose, and his teacher, Felix Solomon, actually gave the premiere of the Elgar Concerto in Philadelphia, I believe. And it received really bad reviews. They must have not had enough rehearsal time. You know, premieres are often
right.
a little iffy.
Well, when I tell stories of opera all the time, I mean, how often is it that something failed in the beginning?
And right. But this opera is going to nail it.
We are not grafting that onto this experience.
It didn't do very well. And people blame the piece. You know, they thought, oh, the Elgar, it's not up there with the Dvorak cello concerto. And Jackie really, truly identified with it and just connected with it and really made her initial entrance on the world stage with that concerto.
And brought it to life.
And she brought it to life. And then it became it's now, you know, part of the pantheon of cello concertos.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's one of the greats.
I believe Sheku Kanna Mason has put it into his.
He just put it. I heard that he. I haven't heard his yet, but I heard that he just put it out.
So people still making very good use of it today. So Luna, tell me about how you've taken the story and worked music around it, and what has been your role in this whole experience of bringing this to life.
Writing an opera about Jacqueline Dupré for Matt and our amazing soprano Marnie Breckenridge was actually my idea to begin with.
Right.
I had heard the two of them play together, and they were playing music of mine, and I just was blown away by their spark, the musicianship between these two incredible virtuosi. And at the time, I was thinking about operatic stories that could be told with the very few forces, you know, an intense musical experience, but not a huge orchestra, not a huge chorus.
And often that is what tapestry opera is known for.
That's
is
true.
Giving us opera in a different format than perhaps we imagine.
Absolutely.
Right away. Sure.
Yeah. So I was inspired just by their musicianship and what was possible with Matt and Marnie. And Matt had told me over the years about his experience with Jackie. I felt as though there was a way, with the kind of intensity that these two had and with the closeness that we had to Jackie's story, that we could make a piece that would capture something about her experience, about what's going on inside her as she goes through this incredible rise to fame, to accomplishing what she loved and what she wanted in her life, and then to have it all ripped away.
And it's sort of interesting too, because you're working with this Elgar music, but at the same time you're working around that as well. Is that fair to say?
Well, one thing that's interesting when I'm approaching the music, we're writing this for audiences that don't know Jackie and audiences that do.
Right.
For audiences that are really familiar with the Elgar,
okay,
there will be hints all the way through that there is something coming, something you might have heard before, something that maybe
you might recognize.
Yeah. But it doesn't become very clear until a moment that I guess I shouldn't specify.
You should not keep it a tease. That's right.
But in a way, what it does is we're not trying to reproduce anything about her life. We're trying to get to what it's like to be inside her head, the way that she embraced music, the way she embraced life, her sense of just joy in the tactile and the expressive qualities of the world. We're bringing that out. And basically, the way she approached the Elgar was exactly that. That's why people loved to hear her play the Elgar. Mm. We're weaving those feelings, that joy and that power, into something that relates.
One thing that we haven't mentioned is that the other relationship to the Elgar concerto that Luna was inspired by is the form. So it's in four parts, four movements. You have the soprano and the cellist, so I'm a character too, and Michael Morey has had unbelievable patience in my acting debut.
Right, good.
Here with the opera, but I am the cello, in essence. On one hand, this is a celebration and memorializing her contribution to our musical world, and just the idea that her expressive abilities were so raw. It was so direct from the heart to the audience. I don't think anybody ever connected the way she did. I mean, it was just so genuine, so natural.
The opera is not very linear. It's not trying to tell the story one step at a time. We
sure.
get a sense of her at age five. We get a sense of her discovering the cello. We also get a sense of what it's felt like to be on stage. We get a sense of her confusion when she started to have symptoms. And we also see her very late in life thinking about her legacy and realizing what it means to be separated from her cello.
I think it's a great chance to remember a star and look back at a life.
Absolutely.
And I think this is a wonderful chance to remember her and think about her artistic contributions. Jacqueline, running February 19th through the 23rd, Betty Oliphant Theatre, 404 Jarvis Street in Toronto, tapestryopera.com for tickets. And Matt Heimovitz and Luna Perlwolf, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing this afternoon.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You're with The Oasis.